Another day, another dollar as a holler to the world. I love the way I'm living, love the Gucci, love the girls. Love the parties and the clubs, love the models and hot tubs. Love the German engineers set on deep dish dubs. Another tour around the world, entertaining the fans. I love walking through the airport, taking pictures, shaking hands. Every day for me's an oyster, crack it open, find a pearl. I love the way I'm living, what a holler to the world.
Welcome back to Marking Out with MVP and Dwayne Swayze.
And Dwayne Swayze. I'm doing Swayze.
No, me. No, that's Dwayne behind the camera.
No, that's Ryan behind the camera.
Ryan Williams.
Our audio visual engineer, technical master.
Guru.
What are we doing, man?
Man, we're going to talk some wrestling, man.
Okay, I'm always down for that.
Right on.
Talk a little wrestling. Hold on, before we do that, I got to show off my jersey, though.
Oh, that's fly, man.
Look at that. My all-time favorite band, Bad Brains. Band of DC logo, just like the tattoo I got right here, PMA.
Right on.
And, man, I'm trying to remember the name of Street Level Clothing. Got this from Street Level Clothing. I don't know if they're still in print. I think they, like, do limited runs and stuff. I got a fishbone one, too. I'm going to rock that for the next episode.
Right on.
I'm going to wear the fishbone one for the next episode.
Is Street Level, was that in Miami? Where'd you get this?
I don't know where they're based.
Okay.
I don't know where Street Level... The clothing is based, but not Miami. I know they're not Miami.
And you bandaged up, man. What's up?
Oh yeah, that was from the trios match at the pay per view when they put Bobby on top of the table. They put Shelton through the table. Mm. Then you had the table debris, and what a lot of wrestling fans don't really think about is. Going through the table is way less dangerous than the debris that's left around.
Understood.
And I knew Shelton was coming to do the big dive over the top. So I was trying to move some of the debris. And in the process, I ended up getting hit and tripped and, like, filleted a chunk of skin from my wrist.
Yikes.
And it was just a little flap of skin hanging off my wrist.
So is this when Shelton, he, like, throws... Ricochet.
And then he went and hit the big dive.
Yeah.
And if you notice, you'll see, like, he slipped a little bit.
And you were standing.
Yeah, because I was able to get back up at that point.
Okay.
But prior to that, I was trying to move the shit out, the table debris.
Okay.
And he still stepped on it and slipped a little bit, but he got his footing. So, yeah, shit is dangerous, man.
Right on.
Garbage cans and tables and chairs and all that, even though it's fake.
Nothing fake about it, man. When
my blood wasn't fake.
When you did your ball and elbow, my TV almost got ripped off of the wall. That, like, when you put your hands together and you, that whole place seemed like they said it, man.
Listen, I was overwhelmed by the response because, you know, St. Louis has a very special place in my heart because that's where I won the United States Championship for the first time.
Right on, okay.
So, and they always treat me so well there, you know. And when I hit him with the knee to the face, the throat chop and the knee to the face, and he took the bump, I heard them come up before I did because they already knew. You know?
People were standing, and it's like they were, he's going to do it.
So the nostalgia factor. And then when they posted it on Instagram, and AEW posted it, I think at this point it's got like over 3 million views.
That's amazing.
And I just want to say thank you so much for appreciating that and you know, just what it means to me because, like, all the comments are, like, just overwhelmingly positive. Like, oh, you brought my childhood back, or, oh, man, I jumped to my feet. You know, it's just thank you for allowing me to be a part of your life and part of your family. You know, like, my boy Joey at Champions BJJ, when he told me a long time ago, he's like, man, this is weird for me, like, you know, training jiu-jitsu with you, because, like, my family sat down to eat dinner with you every night.
Right
you
know, on.
You know, so, I'm so fortunate to have the career that I've had, man, you know, and the fact that the nostalgia factor for the old, you know, balling, you know, that people still care, and I thank you for allowing me to still play. But, I mean, I'm 52, and brother, I can still go. And for you young dudes up in the comments talking about I'm an old head and too old, I will dog walk your bitch ass. And your daddy too, while your mama and your sister salivate over me. How about that?
Right on.
But anyway,
Oh, one more thing about that. Ricochet did something that I thought was really cool. Right before you dropped, although he came on the show, then costed your boys the championship. I thought, that wasn't cool, Ricochet.
Slimy ass Ricochet.
But right before you dropped the elbow, like, he reached up to the rope like he was trying to get away. Yeah. That was so cool, man.
Listen, one of the beautiful things about this podcast, you had to teach me this. I thought we were doing a YouTube show. I didn't know it was a podcast. But I talk about the little details that a lot of people don't understand, you know, what makes people great. And Ricochet is amazing, man. Like, his body control, what he's capable of doing with his body, the details, when he sells, like, the little extra pump, like, he's phenomenal. And working with him, like, what he's, like, in our business, when everything's working the way it's supposed to, we make each other look better than we are. Ricochet will make you look way better than you are, you know? And I think he's doing the best work of his career, right, man. And it's those little details. Yeah. That sometimes, you know, I think I talked about this where Arn Anderson taught me, like, a fan can't articulate what it was they saw, but the brain processes.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, him trying to get up, you know, and nah, you know, like,
I was concerned because they already ruined the entrance. I was ready to be like, we heard people. I had to put my drink down. Like, come on, man, let me have something. But then when he did that, when he moved, I was like, oh, he's going to take it from me. But then he laid back down.
It's been really fun working with Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. And Toa and Bishop Khan, like, those dudes are eager to learn. And they're really working hard, man. And we're having a good time working with them and teaching them. And there's a lot that goes on during the match that, you know, you're not aware of, where me, Bobby, and Shelton are communicating with them in certain ways to help them grow and to help them get better. And I don't think you can dispute that from the time they started working with us till now, I don't think, if you're being honest, I don't think that you can dispute that they have improved.
Right,
they
on,
have gotten
right
better.
On.
You know? And you're only as good as the people you work with.
And four.
You know, so I'm having a blast, man. You know, even with the scoops of flesh cut out of my wrist.
Filleted.
My neck jacked up from Ricochet, that dive he did off the stage at the street fight. Like, whoa, how you wiped me out on that one. But, man, I'm glad to still be here, man.
Four.
And I only got a little bit of time left. So for those of you that hate when I get in the ring, you can rejoice in the fact that I won't be doing it too much longer. And for those of you that love when I get back in the ring, I won't be doing this too much longer. But you know what, though? I'm rich, bitch!
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Oh, 10-4-P. So you spent some time in Miami recently, right?
Yeah. I got a chance to go back home real quick.
CCW?
Well, that's different. CCW, my old home promotion, and they run a lot of shows and they have a school, and I'm going into business with them. I'm gonna finally be a part owner of a wrestling school.
Oh, congratulations,
yeah,
man.
So we just gotta finalize all the business stuff. But yeah, I'm going into business with my good friends at CCW. But it was funny because I got a chance to go back to my old neighborhood, Opa-locka. And Opa-locka was not a good place to grow up, dog. And it's funny too, because I was telling somebody, like, you know, one of my favorite songs, especially from my time in the wrestling business, is Johnny Cash, I've Been Everywhere.
I've been everywhere,
man. You know, and when he says, like, all the places that he's been to, if you listen real close, he says, I've been to Opa-locka.
Oh, he said it in there.
He says Opa-locka.
Oh, all right.
There's only one reason that Johnny Cash was in Opa-locka. He was buying crack.
can you please tell the story of you and your brother selling crack or selling cocaine? You're little as kids.
Oh man, this is awful, man. My life is a movie, I'm telling you, man. So for those of you that have seen Cocaine Cowboys, that's the Miami that I grew up in. Early 80s, cocaine was literally falling out the sky. It was washing up on the beach. Like, cocaine was everywhere. My father was a cop, and he had a plate of cocaine in his house all the time with lines chopped up on it. He'd have us on the weekends, and he'd have his cop friends over, and I'd see him smoking weed and snorting coke and everything.
Cops,
yeah, this is Miami. This is law enforcement. I'm watching this happen in real time, you know. My father had a Quaaludes on the nightstand, a shoebox of Mexican brick weed up under the bed.
Damn.
Coke. Yeah, that's Miami, man. It was wild. And the apartment complex that we lived in, Nile Garden Apartments, it was a big square. And in the middle was like the courtyard, swimming pool. And the first time I heard the term cocaine cowboys was my mother using it to refer to the dudes that used to hang out by the bank of payphones in our apartment complex. It's all the Spanish dudes over there with pagers. And, you know, and like I said, it was a big square. And then it was a hallway, and there was a bank of payphones. And then there was a big laundry room. And then you go out the other end. That was the parking lot behind the building. And with no exaggeration, and anybody who grew up in Miami can tell you that what I'm saying is the truth. I used to find little baggies of cocaine all the time. Because, you know, you just reach in your pocket, get your car keys, and your blow falls out. You know, on the little payphones. It was common to find it. And I knew what it was. Miami Vice was my favorite show. I was a precocious kid. And I remember... I'd sometimes find the little baggies, and there were certain people in the apartment complex that, you know, you knew they had the little long pinky nail. You know,
right on.
Certain people. And I'd find it, and I remember this dude, Joe, Spanish dude, young, good-looking guy, drove a Camaro, you know. And I had the little bag, and I found it, and he goes, "Where'd you get that?" I said, "I found it over by the payphones." He goes, "Let me have that." So I gave it to him. And he gave me a couple dollars. And I was like, "Thank you."
How old are you?
9? 8? Let me see. What grade was I? Dude, I was 4, 5, 6. Dude, I was like 7 or 8. I was like third or fourth grade. And I remember him, you know, I'm asking him about cocaine. And it's a grown ass man. He was in his mid 20s saying, "Yeah, you know, you give yourself a little bump in the morning, you're up like that, you're ready to go." And I'm just like, okay, because I see people doing it, right. I see, you know. Right. And he gave me like $2 or whatever, you know, which was candy money for me. You know, I'm going to get some now or later, you know. And that's kind of when I realized, like, oh, grown-ups, if I find these little bags, there's certain people I could go to and give it to them, and they'll give me some money. And I remember this other dude in the building, this Bahamian dude. I gave it to him, and he gave me some money. I went and bought a G.I. Joe.
Oh. You
know, and me and my little brother figured out, like, well, we find these bags, let's save them. And there's certain people in the apartment complex we could go to, and we can give them these little bags and get some money. And like, at the time, thinking about it, like, as an adult now looking back, you know, this is some depraved shit, you know. But to put it in perspective, like, I went to fourth grade at Opa-locka Elementary School. So, yeah, this shit was happening. I was in third, fourth grade. And I remember walking behind our building was Nile Garden Apartments. And then back there it was just a fucking crack was ravaging the community. It's early 80s. And I remember being a little kid walking home from school. And I can't remember that street, but that was the dope stroll. The cars pull up, dudes run out. You know, sell rocks, whatever you wanted was back there. And I'm telling you, I was 8 or 9, and I saw kids smaller than me that were playing dope stroll. They had leaves from the tree and little pebbles, and they were
playing it like it's cowboys and
like they're emulating what they're seeing growing up. So these kids, so if I was 8 or 9, they had to be 4 or 5. And they got little leaves and little pebbles, and they're doing drug transactions. And I remember looking at them and thinking, oh man, that's messed up, man. Damn, like, damn, that's what they're. But I'm doing the same thing, but for real, you know, like not even.
Poor kids.
And there were these dudes, because down the street from our apartment complex was Miami-Dade Community College. And there were these dudes that lived in an apartment, and they were frat boys. And one of them, I remember, he was like a bald head, like kind of jacked up dude. And they were all cool guys. They used to mess with me and my brother. We would talk smack and, you know. And one day, I showed him the little bag. And he was like, man, let me get that, man. I said, nah, man. I'm hustling him now. Nah, my daddy's a police officer. I'm going to give it to him. He goes, no, well, give it to me. You shouldn't have that. You know. I said, give me some money. I'll give it to you. And he's like, man, you little badass kid, man. I'm like, so I gave it to him. And I remember he gave me a few dollars. And it's almost embarrassing to say, like, we had like a little relationship periodically. I'd find a little baggie and I'd knock on the apartment door. Hey, man, you guys want this? And they'd be like, you know, they'd take up a little collection. They'd give me a few dollars. But one day, and then me and my little brother used to be on this, you know, and he's 3 years younger than me.
And one day, a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old out there.
Yeah, my little brother who's a cop now, yeah. And a Metro Dade cop and a master chief in the Navy. He was worse than me, but that's a whole nother story. But so one day we get this little baggie. And we give it to them, and they said, well, we'll give you the money later. We don't have it now. I'm like, okay. So well, later on, we go back to get the money, but they won't answer the door to the apartment. We know they're in there. We can hear them in there, but they won't answer the door. And I remember I was crying a little bit, like, man, that's our candy money, man. Why you ripping us off, man, you know? And my little brother was mad. We were like, man, that's messed up, man. So I had figured out, remember, big Miami Vice fan. And we used to play cops and robbers in the apartment building all the time. And I figured out that if you took some sugar and you took some flour and you mixed it up at the right consistency, it would look like cocaine. So I'd put it in a little sandwich bag and put it in a little lunchbox thing, and that would be like the briefcase, and we'd have the little toy guns, and we'd be playing a little bit more sophisticated than the kids on the street. We're playing Miami Vice.
Shaka, he just designed the thumbnail clip. I don't have to say you nothing. Please go ahead.
And we're playing Miami Vice with the fake cocaine and the guns and, you know, play money and, you know. And I had this brilliant idea. Them dudes ripped me off for my money. I gave them the bag and they didn't give me my money. So I got one of the little bags, the empty one that I found, and I put some of the flour and the sugar in there. And I made it fat, too. I closed it up. And I went and I found a dude. I said, hey, man. You guys want to buy this? And they looked at it and I gave him. I said, no, because last time you didn't give me my money, man. And I forgot how much, but I made him give me a little bit more money because it was a fat bag, too. It was a full fat. It wasn't like a half used bag. Yeah. And you could see him like, hey, let me get that. No, because last time you ripped me off. I feel like they gave us $10. I feel like because me and my brother went split it. That's what I feel like. And we walked away laughing. And then later on, we were by the pool, and I seen that dude, and he was jacked, bald head dude. Like, and I remember like being a little kid thinking like, when I grow up, I'm gonna look like that, you know. But I was scared because I knew, you know,
he was gonna come, right?
But at the time, I didn't think about it. I was just laughing, you know. Yeah. But then he's walking up to me, and I'm thinking like, oh shit, damn, you know, I'm kind of getting scared. And then he stops and he looks at me and my little brother, and he goes, y'all some little badass kids, man. Y'all some badass kids. Y'all bad. And I went, who's bad? Us or you? You a grown-ass man buying cocaine from little kids. And you ripped us off, and now we ripped you off back. And we're bad. You know, and I, like now, as an adult, looking back, I look at my son, who's older now than I was at the time. And I'm trying to imagine if he told me, hey, Dad, I just sold a bag, half a bag of cocaine to somebody. And, dude, I was Miami in the 80s, man. It was wild. I can't even really express to you if that story doesn't explain how wild Miami was.
That is why we need the movie. So thank you, Dave. We need the movie.
Yeah, Dave, we got to get this. And on a side note, somebody sent me a link saying that me and Dave were talking about doing my movie, a rated X version of my life story. I don't know where that shit came from. Yes, me and Dave Bautista have talked about him, his production company, doing my life story. And I did say that, you know, my life isn't, you know, rated PG.
Yeah.
So I probably was joking and said, you know, it'd be rated X. But then, you know, these asshole dirt sheets.
Come on, guys.
Put some shit about a rated X version of my life. That sounds like we're going to do something like a porn movie.
That sounds like a booty movie.
F-O-H. You know. But yeah, man, that's the Miami that I grew up in. Right. And I went back to that apartment building. It's still there. It's gotten exceptionally worse.
Worse even now? Okay.
I mean, when we first moved in, it was going bad. It was still kind of nice. And then it got bad. And now it's awful, man. It's in really bad shape. But such is life, man. You know, and it's, you know, shout out to Billy Corbin, Raconteur Productions, my good friend. But, man, Miami is just, it's another place, man. And, I mean, I am a legitimate dyed-in-the-wool 100% Florida man, right here. Florida man, I am that. Florida man sells cocaine as a child to grown-ups. Florida man robs a casino on a cruise ship. Florida man, yeah, I'm a Florida man, but I'm not proud of that shit.
Sound like you need to run for office to me.
Oh, hey, but I mean, I learned a lot, man. I learned a lot.
So I want to chat to our Patreon subscribers. NVP has given me the blessing and his curation to send out the Ghetto Strong Style Samurai shirts.
Now we got to do another run of those.
Yeah, man, with the J's down here.
And the Tims.
And the Tims on.
With the boom box and the cassettes, yeah. We need to do another run of those.
Yeah, man. So our Patreon subscribers, you guys will be receiving these very soon. As far as everybody watching on YouTube, please comment, like, subscribe, and share, please. We can see that now 200,000 of you guys are watching, which is awesome.
As a matter of fact, how about we celebrate that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We hit our first 200,000 1 week episode.
1 week.
200,000 views in a week.
That's crazy, man.
Initially, it was taking us like a month to get 100,000 views. Now we got 200,000 in a week. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So please continue watching.
But hold.
But like, comment, subscribe, and share. RIP, I got a question for you.
I told you about that RIP.
Damn it. I haven't done this in months. Okay, P, I got a question. Do the opening 60 seconds of a match really matter? And if so, how can that first minute dictate the tone and energy for the rest of the match?
Oh my God, of course it matters, because that's when you establish who is who. You know, I remember my ex-wife, she used to kill me, because I used to be a massive NBA fan. I used to be a really, really big sports fan, not quite as much as I used to be. But she always used to tell me, you only got to watch the last 2 minutes of a basketball game. That's all that matters, the last 2 minutes. Mm. And I was like, damn, that's
that just hit me.
Yeah, that's kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah, because all that, everything they're doing before that, it only comes down to the point exchanges in the last 2 minutes. It's like, damn, okay, well, all right, yeah, you know. But when you're talking about a pro wrestling match, those first 60 seconds, you establish who the heel is and who the babyface is. And that's going to establish, and you also establish the story that you want to tell. So the first 60 seconds of a match are vital to establishing who the characters are and what story you're trying to tell. So if you, and I've seen matches, especially, you know, some lesser experienced indie guys where they get right into the match and they go into this amazing high spot, and it's just bing, bam, boom, 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 and they finish. And, you know, people are applauding, but they're applauding, you know, for the action, but there's no connection to who's who. And, okay, granted, some people probably, you know, already know, like, this is my guy, or, the, you know, but in that first 60 seconds, that's where you want to establish your character. I'm a white meat good guy baby face, and I'm a self-absorbed asshole heel, you know. And that's where you plant the seeds for your storytelling. In the beginning, typically, you know, traditionally, your baby face is out wrestling the heel and kind of establishing that he's better. The heel's, you know, kicking the rope and getting mad, and now you're establishing an emotional connection. We like this guy. We don't like that guy. The first 60 seconds of a match, I think, if you're doing it the right way, and I say the right way because everyone, you know, we've discussed it, shades of gray, flavors of ice cream, people think, well, I'll do it this way, and that's the way I want to do it. But traditionally, there's a formula that has worked for 100 years. And if you take the first 60 seconds to establish who you are, let the fans know, I'm this guy, he's that guy, then the fans will be able to understand without knowing who anybody is, because if you're not on TV, if you're a relatively new indie guy at working at a new promotion and the people don't know you, you've got 10, 12, 15 minutes to show them what you can do in terms of high spots or, but that first minute, one of the things Norman Smiley told me, I remember one of the first lessons that he gave me early in my career, working at an indie show and Davey, he said somebody taught him, the one time that you can be absolutely certain that all eyes are on you is during your entrance. Mm-hmm. When you come out, everybody's looking at you. Do something. And I forgot who he said taught him that lesson. He said, scratch your ass, pick your nose, do something, you know, to let the people figure out like what they're looking at. And I think that same thing applies to the ring. Both wrestlers have their entrance. Both wrestlers are in the ring and they face off for the first time. Now you can establish character. And in your style of working, you can establish who you want the people to cheer for, who you want the people to boo for. And if you're both baby faces, hey, that first 60 seconds when you both go and you shake hands and you show respect, like, oh, okay, you know, these there's no bad guy here. These guys respect each other. They're cool. You know, but if you have the guy go over and he goes shake hands and he does that shit or whatever, you know, all of those things you plant in the very beginning so you can establish who's who and let people know what they're watching. And then that's where we come back to that emotional connection. I like this guy. I don't like this guy. I want to cheer for this guy. I want to boo that guy. And then you take him for a ride.
So if you and Ricochet get in the ring together, just you versus Ricochet, how would, with you or Bobby or Shelton, are you considered the good guy or bad guy?
Well, that's the crazy part, right? So we haven't changed anything that we do. We wrestle the same. We do the same. I cut the same promos for the most part. But the fans have decided that they like us.
Okay.
So I would be perceived as the babyface, and I might be more likely to do some things that I wouldn't do if I was, you know, the flat out and out heel. But if me and Ricochet were going to have a match, he would establish early on, he'd be the chicken shit heel. I'm bigger, I'm stronger, but he's faster, he's more agile. So he would stay away from me and he would use his agility to, you know, and then he would, you know, probably show off or something. And then I'd probably be standing behind him and knock his dick in the dirt. You know? But I think that would be the story. No matter what I would do in that situation, Ricochet got so much heat now. He's done such a great job of making people dislike him. I'm the babyface by default, you know. It's like, we hope MVP beats your ass, you know. And he's come so far from when I first met him years ago, and understanding how important character work is. Like, you can do amazing shit. There's a lot of guys that can do amazing shit and people will like your shit. But when they have an emotional connection to you, beyond just the moves that you can do, that's when you really become a star. That's when you can really start making money, because now people want to wear your shirt. They want your merch. They want, you know, and I think sometimes younger talent forget that, yeah, you want to have an exciting match, but it's not all about the moves. It's about getting an emotional response from the fan. And when you do that right, you really can't do anything wrong. Because once you lock into the emotional aspect, and that, you know, there's another thing. If you've been around for a long time, in my case, fans know MVP. They've seen me on TV for a very long time. And as recently we showed at the pay-per-view, nostalgia. There are so many people that grew up watching me, you know, when I do this and then do this. They know what's coming next. And that's they want that, you know, and it's emotional. The number of people that I saw in the comments on Instagram that said, oh, man, you brought me back to my childhood. Oh, in my house, we all screamed. No.
It's like you look dead at us, though. Like, you look directly into the camera like, y'all see, y'all know what the fuck's about to happen.
Oh, you know what's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
And we get to enjoy that together.
Yeah.
Because when I do it, when I first did that to Ricochet and he took the bump, I could hear the crowd at Rumble because they knew, like, that's the sequence.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. And then once I put the arms out and started, you could hear them come up. I'm feeding off of that, you know?
None, right?
And you guys are validating me because I'm like, okay, oh, yeah, they want this. They're ready. You know what? I want to give it to you, you know? And when I, you know, come up and do my shimmy and drop the elbow, and for those of you who don't know any better, you guys who are late to the game, yes, I blatantly stole that from The Rock. Blatantly. I don't pretend I didn't. I don't apologize for it. I blatantly took that shit. And at the time, Jim Jones, We Fly High, that was the hot joint. I had the cornrows.
Yep.
It went together like peanut butter and jelly. It was perfect. And to this day, people still dig it. And I'm glad that I'm still able to do it. And it feels great. But again, it comes back to the emotional response.
Pete, how did you come up with the, in your entrance, where you kind of slapped the ground and then, you know, kind of come, that looks so dope with Bobby and Shelton off to the side. That was fire, man.
True story. The first time I did that, so there's a wrestler. He's not around anymore. I don't know that he works much anymore. But we used to be very good friends, low-key.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of my favorite wrestlers. And we ended up becoming friends. And we actually got to be really tight. And when I got called up and I made it to as a matter of fact, Low Key was the one who taught me how to do Japanese Hindu squats.
Right on.
You know? So the, you know, he used to do, when he would come out and his entrance, he would punch the ground, boom, and he would do that shit where he would.
Yeah.
That was his thing. So that was kind of me, like, giving a shout out to my homeboy. I would slap the ground and do that. It was kind of like,
oh, that's fine.
Yeah, initially it was kind of like, you know, I said, hey, you know, I remember saying, Key, you seen that, right? You saw what I did, you know, and he was like, damn. You know? And that was just like, yo, homeboy, look, God.
Right on. Right on.
You know? So that's where it came from initially. And then it just became a regular part of my entrance, where I would boom. And it was just like, bitch, I'm here. Here go me.
Right on, so, right on. Is that when that pyro hits right when you open up?
Right on. Me presenting myself to the audience. Right, you know?
Be sure to leave a comment, guys. Let us know what you like, what you didn't like, what you want to hear.
Personally, I don't give a damn what you didn't like.
Ooh, take that.
But that's just me. Hey, come on with that.
Oh, damn it. There's been a lot of Diddy talk today. That's my bad. Okay, next question. What are the biggest mistakes young wrestlers make when trying to get themselves over too fast?
Doing too much. As the kids say nowadays, you're doing too much. You're doing the most. It's extra. You're doing too much. I think, too, because I've said this many times, and I'll never get tired of saying this, you have some extremely talented wrestlers that have drawn money through the years based solely on their in-ring ability. But the people who have drawn the most money through the years did it because of character work. Stone Cold Steve Austin drew more money than anybody. How many flips did he do? What did he do off the top rope? He kicked and punched his way to infamy, you know? Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, The Rock, you know, John Cena. All of these guys are your big, Roman Reigns, mm-hmm. Randy Orton. These are your biggest money earners. They don't do a lot, but their character work, that's what draws you in. So I think young guys, and we've created an atmosphere where you're trying to get yourself over by impressing the fans with, ooh, look at all the cool stuff I can do. And they try to get every cool move they can get, they can do in the 10 minutes that they have. And you're just throwing it away because people can't really get a chance to absorb what you did to really. So if you took out two or three of those other things, did that one really cool thing and let people go, oh, and then you gave them some character. Instead of doing that extra thing, take a moment to show whatever your character is, your personality. I think it's important to create a persona that will allow people to like or dislike you, to connect or disconnect. Yeah, you can do cool shit, but a lot of guys can do cool shit now. The athleticism in our industry is unbelievable. You know, like, I used to watch Rey Mysterio and think, as a matter of fact, I forgot who said it, but years ago they were talking about when I was in WWE, you know, if you did a tryout, you're not going to impress Finley or Regal with your flips. There's nothing you can do better than Rey Mysterio. You're not going to do anything that they didn't see Rey Mysterio do better, you know? And then Ricochet comes along. And you go, oh, shit, wow, you know? And then, you know, a guy like Will Ospreay comes along. And then, you know, you got these guys that just do amazing, gravity-defying things. El Vikingo or whatever, the Viking, you know, some of these luchadors in Mexico. Yep. Pac, the man that gravity forgot, you know, can do unbelievable things. But what makes your unbelievable things stand out from everybody else's unbelievable things? The character. And I prove me wrong. Ricochet is doing better now than he's done in his whole career. He can still do all that stuff, but it's when he does it and how he does it. Now, I see some of the things people say to Ricochet on social media. People really hate Ricochet.
They hate him, man.
What makes me laugh is like he's on social media trolling, and people think like he's really. And I'm laughing because sometimes I'm like, "AP, watch this," you know. And people think that he's really, like, that's really him, you know. Yeah. No, that's this new character that he's embraced,
right,
that he's mixing in to the social media, you know, this modern day wrestling where you're blurring the lines between the person and the character. Now people hate Ricochet. I think Will Ospreay has come a long way in becoming more of a lovable baby face that people like this kid. You know, they want to hear him talk, and he can do amazing things. I think if you have a movie and your hero is just going through the whole movie just kicking everybody's ass and car chases and shootouts, but there's never a chance for the hero to sit down and drink a shot of whiskey and say a cool line.
Yeah,
Well, that's when you decide you like this guy, you know?
Right.
Or, you know, like, if he's just beating everybody's ass, and okay, that's cool, but you don't get to connect with the character. And I don't give, you think of any movie, where you got a villain or a baby face, there are scenes in the movie where you go, oh, that was cool. Right. And it was usually something the character said or something he said before he did something, you know? And I think the young talent are trying to cram too many cool-ass moves in a match so that they can get everybody to go, wow, that guy can do a lot of cool moves. But I think a lot of them would learn that if you take time to add in character to allow the people to respond to the person that's doing those things, it will get you way further quicker. Like, I was talking to Jet Knight, and he did some kind of move, an offensive move, and then before he went to do his next move, he did like a forward roll. And there was no reason for the forward roll. He just did it because it looked cool just to do a forward roll before he jumped up to go do something else. And I said, and Jet Knight was even talking to me about, like, growing up, he liked characters. He liked personalities. He was into characters. And that's what he loves about wrestling more than anything isn't the moves.
It was the characters.
Characters. Okay. And when we had that conversation, I thought, oh, you get it. You get it. So I said, okay, well, the next time you're getting ready to do something, instead of doing that unnecessary forward roll that you're just putting in there because you want to do something, take a moment before you go into that next role and do something that your character would do.
Okay.
And I don't know what that is. You know, I don't know if you just take a moment and just kind of look around and smile, or if, you know, I forgot who used to do the, you know, like the
like sizing them up.
Yeah, like, yeah, the picture, you know, or you know, do the, or, you know, something character related, whatever it is, your thing. You know, maybe take a moment and twist one of your locks and just smile, you know. That means way more than an extra forward roll. And that gives people a chance to invest in you more. And then go do whatever you're going to do. But let that shit settle for a second. I think the biggest problem is that these young talent are trying to do too much in terms of moves and not enough in establishing the character to create a relationship with the fans. You got 10 minutes. You can't do every cool move that you know, because then it's meaningless. You're not selling everything. You're throwing everything away. And I know to a lot of the young talent, I sound like the old man screaming at the cloud. But there's a reason shit works. There's a reason why the formula. And of course, I've talked about it here many times. Things change. Things evolve. And, you know, some old things have to go the way of the dinosaur, and some new things come in. But you're not going to improve on the wheel.
Right on.
The wheel's been the wheel for thousands of years, you know. I don't know if we ever get to a point where we get hovercrafts and shit, maybe, you know, but we're not there yet.
Right on.
So, yeah, that would be my answer to that question. Yeah, do your cool shit, of course. But do cool character shit. I have made millions of dollars in my career.
Millions.
And you know what? This shit is what people want to see.
Yeah.
When I get booked on indie shows, that's all. The only thing people want to see me do some carrots, some cool MVP shit, say some funny shit, you know, some cool shit.
Hit that elbow.
And then baller, boom. That's what they want. And, you know, Rey Mysterio.
Oh.
619.
That's it.
They want to see the 619. You know, there's, you know, John Cena. You know, they mock him about the five moves of doom, you know. But they want to see that five knuckle. You can't see
for sure,
me.
For sure.
And once you understand, once you figure that part out, and it takes time, I know. I came up during the ECW Attitude Era. I was having matches trying to make people do holy shit chants. I get it. I was there. But I made more money doing less than I did doing more. And again, if you look at the biggest money earners in our industry, they made money because of the character, not because of the moves. Yes, you gotta have your moveset. And you gotta have some cool shit. But people want to buy into the character. remember that. If you want to make money, please remember your money is made in your character. Here, this is where you make your money.
So, next thing I want to ask you before we tell these guys we'll see them next week. Do I have to come down to CCW for my training?
Hey, that sounds like an episode.
Oh, shit.
That sounds like an episode. Once we finalize the work and I'm officially a partner at CCW, we gotta get you and Ryan down to CCW, get you in the ring with Gangrel. Have Gangrel put you through. Yeah, he's the head trainer down there.
Oh, word.
Have Gangrel put you through the paces.
Oh, man. But do I get to have any blood capsules or anything?
No.
Damn. I don't want to bleed.
You're doing so well, man.
I don't want to bleed real blood, man. I want to be a vampire too.
And just for that, I'm gonna tell Gangrel your first lesson will be chair shots.
Oh no, a concussion.
Day one, chair shot. This is how you take a chair shot.
I'm gonna graduate immediately to concussion.
That's a wrap, huh?
Yeah, I think we've done it, man. On the road again.
Another episode. On the road, yeah, in the hotel room. This is our mobile setup. Once again, shout out to the man who makes it all work for doing all this shit, because if it weren't for him, this shit would not exist. This show wouldn't exist if it wasn't for him asking questions.
But you're here because you care, just like I do, about the GOAT.
Oh, shit.
MVP.
Man, once again, thank you guys for hanging out with us. And, man, I really enjoy doing this, man.
Yeah.
And the feedback we get in the comments, you know, some of you are discovering this every week. Somebody new is discovering, and you're very flattering. And you know, a lot of people think this is the coolest podcast out.
We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. You know, and there are lots of good wrestling podcasts out there.
Agreed.
And we're glad that we are among your favorite, and we plan to be here for a while. Every goddamn Monday.
Every Monday. And guys, I'm gonna leave you with something before, you know, peace signs us off. Just remember this name, Garrison. Just remember Garrison.
No. Garrison the Cockatoo. Jeez, man. Boy, let me tell y'all about Harvey Cameron. Brother. On that note, you know, I want to say this, because normally we're sipping while we're talking. But we are recording these episodes before Dynamite. So I actually have to wrestle tonight. So we'll present the bottle. But because of my professionalism, I never smoke or drink before I wrestle. That's just my thing. So I have to have a few tonight.
Yeah.
But on that note.
Thank you in advance, Dave.
See you, Space Cowboy.
I just lay back in something new. Whiskey 21 and over low ball. Make it too neat. Dizza from Harlem. Yeah, I'm from Houston off of Fondren. Mike Mazan in real world flow. Awesome. Plant these seeds in the streets and in weeks. Watch it blossom. Dark night, riding on chrome, swinging through Gotham. It's me and Pete repaving these roads.